Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Cara Rota. Our guest today is Rosello Rago, author of Cooking with Nona, Celebrate Food and Family with over 100 classic recipes from Italian grandmothers. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd love to just hear how the idea for the book came to be and how you started cooking with your grandmother.
So the idea for the book, I've been doing Cooking with Nona on YouTube since 2009, and that came to be, you know, I wrote about it in the foreword about how that all went down, and then the book was a natural thing that I had always wanted to do and that a lot of fans were asking me to do, and honestly, the magic of Facebook, man. I mean, my editor, Janine Dillon, who really was like the champion behind this entire project, just sent me a Facebook message and she was like, oh, you don't have a book? You should have a book. Why don't you have a book? Do you want a book? And I'm like, this happens. This is a thing. So she wrote out the proposal and brought me into Race Point Publishing. And it was just like magic from then on. And we started work on the book. And I think I started work on it last April, and now it's like a real book, and I just can't believe that it happened that quickly.
And not only is your own Nona in the book, but so many others that are such characters. How did you find them, and what were some of your favorite bits of cooking or life advice you received? There are some great ones.
Yeah, definitely. I think the one that sticks out in my mind, I think was the first story I wrote when I sat down to write the book. And it was Nonna Tina, who is from Astoria. Her son owns a fantastic, like, neighborhood institution there called Trattoria L'Incontro, and her lasagna recipe's in the book, and it's amazing. But it was something that she had said when she did an episode of Cooking with Nonna, and she said, you gotta love the food like you love your boyfriend. And I thought that was so amazing that she, like, just, she comes out with these one-liners. You know, she could speak to a person that speaks Chinese and doesn't speak any English, and have them understand her. She just has this way about her. So I think a lot of the Nonna stories and their quotes were like that, were those things that just don't make sense if you would read them in any other context. But then when you read them in the stories, you're like, oh, my God, I understand something about life now that I never thought I could. So all of the Nonnas are women that I've met in my life, either through family or a few just through Cooking with Nona and them writing in and stuff. But most of them were just characters that I've been collecting over the past almost 10 years and you know, waiting to do something like this with them. And finally, it was like the right time to put them all together into one big project.
Making fresh pasta from scratch is such an important part of the book, and it's something that I think intimidates even a lot of very competent home cooks, even though it's so simple. What are some easy pastas to start with and some tips for success?
Okay, so making pasta is a labor of love, absolutely, 100%. And I was not always good at it at all. I mean, I think I really started becoming interested in it in my late teens, and my nonna, who's very close to me, always made pasta. All of my aunts can make pasta. I come from a part of Italy where, you know, there's just one street in the city of Bari, in the old part of Bari, that is just dedicated to pasta. Like, the women sit outside and just make pasta all day. So pasta where I come from, handmade pasta, is a very serious thing. And when I kept trying to do it at first, I was like, why isn't this coming out good? This is supposed to be in my blood. You know, I'm just supposed to be inherently good at this. This is not working, because pasta dough can just look like a huge mess when you're trying to get the dough together. But you just have to keep working at it, keep kneading it. And it's something that I tell people, you literally cannot mess it up, because if it's too wet, you can dry it out. If it's too dry, you can add more moisture. It's really... The end result should be Play-Doh. That's what I like to tell people when I teach. And the best pastas to start with, the best shapes, if you're doing the handmade shapes, the cavatelli are really hard to screw up. That's, you know, there's no super easy pasta, but there are pastas that are harder to mess up.
And I feel like people have this idea of the saucer. I'm from outside of Philly, so gravy. But there's this sort of, she's making a face like, no. There's this sense that the sauce cooks like all day, all Sunday. It's this whole project. But I noticed that there are some sauces in the book that are actually like 45 minutes or less, that this is really not something that you need to slave over the stove all day. You can make an amazing pasta and a sauce for dinner on a weeknight.
Absolutely. So I have, this is a question that is impossible to answer in one sentence. So, like, let me go through my several points that I will make. So, the first of all, the term sauce gravy. Yes, it's something that is definitely all about where you grew up. I'm from Brooklyn, you from Philly, like, or near Philly and stuff. You know, it's two different, it's Montague
Capulet. Two different worlds.
Yeah. Like, it's just, they wouldn't kill each other. But the word... So before I went into cooking, I was going to be an Italian teacher. So the word for sauce in Italian is sugo, and then we have another word called salsa. So we use the word sugo for gravy because we don't have a word for American gravy. There is no word. But a sugo can also be made of other things. You can make a sugo out of anything, out of vegetables, out of... So that's why a sugo, un sughetto, un sugo di pomodoro is a, like, dripping of the tomatoes. Now, in America, they started calling ragu, which is a sauce with meat in it, with sautéed meat in it, gravy, because their reasoning, the logic behind that is that the drippings from the meat go into the sauce and it becomes a gravy. So that is not, technically it's not wrong, but it's just, it's something that people get mixed up with because in Italy, again, we don't have a word that separates brown gravy and sugo. So, and then there's the word salsa, which means a salsa, like a salsa that you would, we use it the same way. Like the salsa that you would put on chips and stuff. So it doesn't need to cook for hours and hours and hours. My other point is that usually you're going to use canned tomatoes or a cooked tomato product. And those, in the canning process, those tomatoes are cooked. And they're also picked at like the height of their freshness. So all you're doing by cooking the sauce for hours and hours and hours is evaporating more and more water. So it's making it just very... much thicker and stuff. And in Italy, sauces, even ragus, even gravies, quote unquote, are not as thick as you would find in like Italian American restaurants.
I want to talk a little bit about Italian food and Italian American food and the sort of differences and overlaps between them.
Okay. So the thing about Italian food is that it's a seasonal improvisational mentality when it comes to food. The way my grandmother cooked and the way, you know, my ancestors cooked, they cooked the things that they cooked because of availability and because of tradition. And the tradition comes from the availability. So if you look at a region like Sicily and they have a dish, you know, pasta con le sarde, they really, they had those things in abundance that was still considered an example of cucina povera or, you know, poor people, peasant food. So they had a lot of sardines. They had a lot of wild fennel. It grew all over the place. So it wasn't considered like this big exotic thing for them to make something like that. And a lot of parts of Italy are exactly like that. It's the seasonal improvisational mentality. It's use what you have. Now, take those people and put them into in America where we have abbondanza. We have everything. Everything we could want. We have meat anytime we want it. We have cheeses, all of them. Every cheese you could think of. We have, you know, butter and cream. And so they started using those things because they were here. So that's where dishes like chicken parmigiana come from. So in Italy, it's eggplant parmigiana. Why? Because they have a lot of eggplant. And chicken was probably reserved, you know, back in the day for holidays or special occasions. You wouldn't eat chicken every single night. But here, you would. I mean, it's like, hey, I got this, like, really delicious chicken cutlet, you know, and I just have mozzarella now. Isn't this cool? And, like, I'm just going to put that on top of it, and I'm going to put parmigiano on top of it, too. And, oh, my God, it's delicious. It's just like the eggplant thing, but it's better. So it's not – I love Italian food. I love very good Italian-American food. I think Italian-American food deserves its own – category. It is its own cuisine. I don't think it's wrong to eat the Italian-American dishes. I love me some fettuccine Alfredo with the heavy cream and stuff. I am not too good for that.
People do think of Italian food in America as all of these kind of cheesy pasta dishes, but Italians do amazing things with vegetables, as you were saying. As we move into springtime, what are some recipes from the book that you're looking forward to making with all that spring produce?
Well, there is a fabulous recipe that is just like this. You're going to look at it and be like, there's three things in this recipe. But it's amazing, and it was given to me by a woman named Rosa from the Amalfi Coast. She lives in a tiny little town called Sant'Agata sui due Golfi, and it's right outside Sorrento. It's a little village, and it means St. Agatha on the two gulfs. So she has beautiful view, and I've gone shopping with her there, and she knows the produce guy, and he picks the good things for her and puts them in a bit. It's very cute. And her brother is actually... She does this beautiful, simple stuff. I met her on when she would cook for my culinary tours that I would do there. And her brother is a Michelin-starred chef who has the restaurant Don Alfonso, which is like the number 2-3 restaurant in all of Italy. So it's so amazing that, you know, her brother makes these crazy elaborate things, and she does this beautiful, just simple, she calls it cucina casalinga, which is housewife cuisine. And she makes this dish of eggplant mushroom style. We call it mushroom style eggplant or melanzana al funghetto. And it's just fried eggplant with a tomato basil sauce. And you're going to want to, like, eat it on everything. You're like, I have to figure out how to use this in every meal that I have in one day because it's amazing.
Something I was brought up with was the concept that you don't go to another person's house empty-handed. And there are some great recipes in the book for desserts and other things that are pretty portable. What are some of your favorite things to make and bring to a party or just to visit?
All right, so if I want to impress somebody, I make my nonna's wedding cake. So my nonna's wedding cake is really special. To me, it's very different. It's Italy also just doesn't do this whole buttercream thing. They're just not into... Now I think some of the food bloggers are starting to venture into that kind of baking, but the traditional baking in Italy is just very simple. A lot of sponge cakes, and my nonna's wedding cake uses the very traditional pan di Spagna, and it's filled with a pastry cream, a vanilla custard, and then an almond paste that we call royal almond paste and amarena cherries. And the whole thing is, like, soaked in rum because, like, even more than you would think, like, an 85-year-old lady would soak her cake in rum. It is soaked to the max in rum and covered with whipped cream. So I feel like every time I bring that to someone's house, I can't wait for them to eat it, and I can't wait for the look on their face, like that look of surprise, like, what is this? This is so different than anything I'm used to. And also my aunt's pasticciotti are amazing. Hands down, incredible. They're also the same kind of concept with the vanilla custard and the amarena cherries, but it's baked into like a little shortbread crust, so it's like a tiny little pie of deliciousness. And Nonna Rosa's chocolate almond caprese cake soaked in whiskey will make you cry. Just saying.
I feel like they do a lot of soaking things in alcohol, which is a great, great addition.
You know, I feel like it's if it's not broken.
There's a great story in the beginning of the book about how the fruitcake is the first thing that you made and it didn't work out. And she said something really nice to you about kind of how it's a learning experience. What's some advice that you give people when they're intimidated or something doesn't work out in the kitchen or kind of keeping them inspired to try again?
You know, I think even Marcella Hazon was not born Marcella Hazon. You learn things throughout your life. You learn technique. I'm still learning. I don't know everything, by all means. I learn from every single person I meet and everything that I read and see. And you just don't shut yourself off to thinking that's too complicated and I just can't do it. You know, your first one might suck. It really might. It very well might not be good or edible. But your second one's going to be better, and your third one's going to be pretty good, and your fourth one's going to be great. So keep going. It's not a race to like get all the cooking knowledge in the world and hoard it and stuff. It's a process. It's definitely a process. I go back to my pasta story, to my fruitcake story. When I started making pasta, I made terrible pasta. I would get frustrated. I would walk away from the board. I would just throw it all out and just, you know, pour a glass of wine and just be like, I can't get this. But I did get it. And now I'm pretty good at it.
Check out the book, Cooking with Nona. Celebrate food and family with over 100 classic recipes from Italian grandmothers. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.